Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And, well, for this first hour, our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy, are you there? Dr. Cuddy, are you there?
Sure.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, Dr. Cuddy has been with us many, many times in the past, and so rather than to go into a great deal of detail of his qualifications, we'll simply mention that you can read his writings at newswithviews.com. That's www.newswithviews.com, and there are well over 100 articles there. You need to pull them down. You need to read them. You need to catalog them. You need to study them, because there's a great deal of wisdom and information there that you will never find elsewhere. So what's the subject today, Dr. Cuddy?
Well, it's the latest column I had on newswithviews.com.
Right, and so what is it going to be?
Well, in this case, the school year had begun not too many weeks ago, and so what I have looked at here is the issue of court-ordered busing. And the title is Court-Ordered Busing Has Failed. Now, a lot of your listeners will listen and say, well, you know, I'm, you know, 50 years old, or I'm 60, or I'm 70, and I haven't got any children, so what do I care about this? Let's, you know, talk about the New World Order or something. But this issue has far-reaching consequences, because if you took a poll of the American public and said, what are you interested in most over time? They would say probably the economy, taxes, and right after that would be education. Now, certain single issues, Iraq or whatever, come up, but over time, education is right there at the top. And you may say, well, what's busing? I mean, I know school children ride buses, but what's that got to do with education? Well, it actually has a great deal, because it involves certain constitutional principles. And on your program in the past, I've mentioned how I blame a lot of the religious leaders in this country for the mess that we're in terms of values, because when Bible reading and school prayer was kicked out in the early 60s, for some reason they, for 40 years, have just sat on their hands and not said, well, this is not separation of church and state with government neutrality. You're still teaching values, so what you're doing is, while we're at home, saying God is the moral authority for what's right and wrong. At school, you're saying there's another moral authority, and that has vast consequences. Well, this issue is one of those the same way. When I was in Washington with the federal government, I remember one of the liberal bureaucrats was riding next to me by happenstance on the subway going from one place to another, and she didn't like the idea that a bunch of people who were in the Reagan conservatives in the Reagan administration were messing around in their area. They had pretty well had their domain invaded, and they didn't like it. They would say, well, if you know you don't want the Department of Education, why are you even here? You know, why don't you go somewhere else? And the problem with that is there's this sort of mental inbreeding among these people, especially liberal intellectuals, on issues like this. And the scenario goes something like, well, there were these bad racist segregationist Southerners, Jim Crow and all that, and finally with Brown versus Board of Education, this nastiness of segregation was ruled on by the Supreme Court, and they eventually decided that we'd have racial balanced schools, because that way these bad, mean, reactionary white racists wouldn't be able to send the little black children to one school and put all the money in their white school.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're going to be talking about his latest article, which is at newswithviews.com. And the basic theme here is on school busing. And looking back on school busing, did this, of course, create less racial hatred or more racial hatred? Did it create better education for our black students or worse education for our black students? Has Sunday integration, forced government integration, created less animosity between the races or more animosity? And I'll never forget hearing Mr. Haley, who had written the book Roots, talking shortly before his death, and he commented that, you know, when he grew up in a racially segregated community. It was segregated by the laws of the South. But he said he never felt any animosity towards the white man. And the black family at that time was a very, very strong family. And there was injustice. And many times the Sydney government edicts increased that injustice. But he said, you know, we were a strong family and we were strong people. And all of that has changed. Now that the government has given us the welfare, they've broken up the black family. But he said the thing that frightens me the most is the hatred for the white that I find in the black community today. And he said our nation cannot survive with this animosity that we have. And, of course, this already came about because of the liberals in Washington, D.C., who claim they wanted to help the blacks, and yet they've destroyed the black family. And today, one in every three young black men is in prison, probation, or parole, thanks to the liberals in Washington, D.C. Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay, picking up on that, what I'm going to do is present something that, unfortunately, your listeners have probably never heard before, because the situation is even worse than you've indicated. It's even worse than you can than your listeners imagine. And it's for different reasons than you normally hear. In fact, you never hear this on the media or the press. And picking up on where I left off, 1954, Brown versus Education, the idea was that the mean, white, racist, southern segregationist was now ruled over by the Supreme Court. They would talk about the integrated education. And that, of course, the way to do that, because these crafty, sneaky, racist, right-wing white people would try and play the game by sending, let's say, black youngsters to a particular school, even not in their neighborhood, some other school. Then they'd sneakily shift the money to their own public schools where their white children went. And since this was very, very bad.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and go right ahead. Pick up that thought there, Dr. Okay. Cuddy, about how the whole idea is that everything was the fault of the white racists there in the South, and certainly we were going to have school busing, and that was going to create equality, a better life for the black man. He was going to have an opportunity to get a better education, and, of course, this was going to do away with racial prejudice and racial discrimination.
Okay, and I hope especially your African-American and black listeners will listen to this, because it may be the first time they've ever heard what I'm about to say anywhere over the past 50 years. It's a deliberately kept secret as to what actually happened. And so the idea was we'd have racial, it was court-ordered busing, and it would be racial balanced busing, because in that way, if all of the schools in the system were racially balanced, then these evil white conservatives wouldn't be able to shortchange the predominantly black schools and put all the money in their in the white students' schools. But there's a fundamental problem with that whole concept. In the first place, the young girl who was involved in this, the Brown versus Board of Education, what had happened to her prior to this, and I myself in the South had attended an integrated school even before the Brown decision, what she was doing was they had to, put her on a bus, and they were sending her to a school far, far away that was segregated. She wanted to go to her nearest or neighborhood school, which happened to be white. Now, it wasn't in her exact neighborhood, but it was the closest school to her. What she had no intention of doing is saying, yes, I want to go to this school, but never mind, you take me against my will and send me to that far away school in that other neighborhood. In other words, she basically wanted to attend, if not the neighborhood, the closest school to her, and that's what that issue was about. Now, the powers that be, both black and white at the time, basically liberal, said, no, you know, we're going to make a big case over this. And what we're going to do is pursue this, and eventually they had various court decisions which sort of fleshed out what became racial balance busing. And so what this article does is picks up on that and shows exactly what really did happen. And the way I begin the article is by saying, unfortunately, many of the children who are riding school buses today are riding as a result of court-ordered busing. And here's the main point, and the rest of the article will be about this, which actually is a subversion of the civil rights movement to protect minorities. Now, that may have been the first time any of your listeners, especially your African-American listeners, have ever heard that. Racial balance busing, generally promoted by liberal intellectuals in the courts, in the higher education, and the public school system, is actually a subversion of the civil rights movement. Now, if you say that to them, like I said to this woman when I was with the federal government, and she was a liberal bureaucrat holdover from the Carter years, they would, you know, they would have sort of a mind warp. They'd say, wait a minute, you know, court-ordered busing actually is against the civil rights movement? I don't understand this. You know, it's to help them, don't you understand, she would say. And at the time, I'd say, well, see, that's what happens to you people. And she was a white person. When you people just talk to yourselves, you have this sort of mental inbreeding, and that's all you see. You do not see what you're actually doing is the opposite of what you say your intention is. And that's what I'm going to explain in this article. The purpose of the civil rights movement was actually to protect the rights of minorities to do anything, to live, to sit, to eat, to drink, anywhere they wished, among other things. You may remember at the time, if a black person wanted to drink from a water fountain, usually in the South, although there was segregation in the North, there were separate white and black water fountains, white and black restrooms, and so forth. And so the idea behind the civil rights movement was to protect their right to have equality under the law, and they could drink from any water fountain they wanted, and so forth. What it was not supposed to do was for government to tell blacks that only a certain number of them could live in any particular neighborhood or sit and eat at any particular lunch counter or drink from any particular water fountain. I mean, you can see the idea. According to this theory, racial balance busing, which is almost invariably what the courts order, what the government set was a precedent. They could literally come into, if they wanted to, under this same logic, to a restaurant, let's say a soul food restaurant in a generally black community, and say, I'm sorry, 90% of you are going to have to leave. We're going to ship you across town to this restaurant that serves southern white dishes. And so this is basically the principle that was set. Now, for some reason, the public in general, even these liberals, don't seem to see that that's what they've done. But this is what 50 years of court-ordered busing has been based on. Such a principle when it comes to school assignments. What happens when the courts order racial balance busing to integrate students, in order to achieve this balance in each school in the system, the minority population must be bused in inverse proportion to the white population. Now, if you want to try something, if you want to try an exercise, go up to a liberal and say something like this. A liberal intellectual, you know, really well-educated person, and say, you support court-ordered busing? Oh, yeah, it's great for minorities. Yeah, it overcomes that segregationist evil of those white conservatives. And say, aha. Uh-huh. And then you say, okay, let's say that a school system is 90% white and 10% black. Ask them what percentage of the white youngsters and what percentage of the black youngsters have to be bused in order to achieve racial balance. And they'll probably hem and haw and, you know, not come up with the right answer. Even though, you know, this is an elementary school percentage problem, right? Well, the answer is that you would have to bus 90% of the black youngsters, but only 10% of the white youngsters in order to have balance in each school. I mean, you can do the math on a piece of paper. You know, draw your little circle and have 10 little sub-circles, you know, and have one of them have 100 black youngsters and each of the other ones have 100 white youngsters. And then you can see in this diagram how 90 of those 100 black youngsters would have to be shipped to each of the other schools, but only 10% of the white youngsters from each of the other nine schools would have to be shipped across town into the black school. In other words, the tremendous burden of this busing falls on minorities. Relatively few whites are bused for the purpose of racial balance, which is what the courts order almost invariably. Now, we usually would call that discrimination. So what you have is court-ordered busing, which is supposed to overcome discrimination, actually institutionalizing government discrimination against minorities, which was never the purpose of the civil rights movement. Now, there's consequences to that. That's why I said at the first of this article that you may think this is just about a bunch of school buses and kids. No, there are real consequences to that. The question I ask next is, if you've ever been on a school bus, have you ever tried to study? It's impossible. It's virtually impossible. You know, they're laughing and, you know, if they can't get out of their seat, jumping around and playing and hollering and all. It's a very noisy place. You can't study on a school bus. Most of these school buses are across the city, across the county, which means, you know, it's about at least a half an hour one way, a half an hour back, more likely an hour one way and 1 hour back. So these youngsters on this bus are spending an hour or 2 hours a day on this bus where they can't study. Now, if you think about it, if you're literally busing, let's use the percentage 88% and 12%, since 12% is about the black population of the U.S. The blacks comprise about 12% of the total U.S. population. All right, that means you have to bus 88% of them. All right, if you take 88% of any population, black, white, oriental, whatever it is, and you stick them on a school bus for an hour or two a day where they cannot study, what you're basically doing is denying them an hour or two a day study time that the whites aren't being denied. Now, the question I ask is, could that possibly be the reason why minority achievement is lower than that of whites? Blacks are making gains, but they are lower, you know, in academic achievement scores, the CAT scores, and, you know, all various national measurements, they're lower, right? Well, this could be one of those reasons. If you told your child, you know, Johnny, you've got 2 hours of study time tonight, but we're not going to let you have them. You're not going to be able to study at all tonight. You know, that just might affect Johnny's academic achievement. Okay. So what the courts have been doing is denying a very large percentage of the black children in our nation an hour or more study time a day while, you know, they're on the school bus that only a relatively small percentage of the white youngsters are being denied. Moreover, there's a second component to this that affects all people, all of these people. And remember, education is the number two issue in the country. Massive millions and millions of people are affected by this. Not only the children, but their parents are very concerned. These people have been doing this for like 50 years. So that means if you are 50 years old right now, white or black, this has affected you because this has been going on for 50 or so years. If you're a black listener to this program, you have been affected by this. You have been denied your civil rights, your minority rights, whatever you want to call it, for decades. You are living the consequence of what these people, these liberal intellectuals and the courts, have done to you for all this time. Okay, the second point of this is that all the research, all the educational research, doesn't matter, you know, left, right, Democrat, Republican, shows that parental involvement is absolutely critical to students' academic achievement. It's critical to it. But the question then is, if a very high percentage of black students are attending schools across town from their parents, this makes parental involvement extremely difficult. I mean, how do they do that? Oftentimes, the black youngsters are poorer than the white youngsters. So you have poor black parents, and, you know, they work all day very hard. They're tired. Now they come home, and what do? Are they supposed to get on a bus? Are they supposed to get a taxi, you know, and ride 10 miles across town or across the county to attend a parent-teacher meeting or some other school function? You know, some athletic event or whatever, it's impossible.
And, of course, the whole idea was that they wanted, of course, to make a colorblind society. And how did they make a colorblind society? Why, they did it by pointing to race and talking about race and discriminating on race and busing by race. And, of course, look at what's happened to the blacks in our society. Three-quarters of the black children today are raised in a home without a father in it. That's the end result of the liberal planner. And, of course, what's really behind that, I would like to suggest, is an intense hatred of blacks. But, of course, they're never going to admit that. Oh, it's we love them. That's why we're doing so much to help them here in what used to be a free land. Well, go right ahead, Dennis.
Well, picking up on what you just said, it's an excellent point because you know we're going to help you. That's why we're doing it. If you stop and think about it, what they're really saying is those evil white racist segregationist Southern conservatives. They're bad. You know, they were trying to tell you what to do. They were trying to boss you around. You know, be your slave master or whatever jargon they want to use. But basically what they're doing is they've just substituted themselves for those people. You know, they are the new boss of blacks. What they're saying is, we don't care what you want. You know, we don't care if you want to go to this particular neighborhood school. I mean, you know, as your choice to do that, if you want to. I mean, if you don't, you don't. But if you want to, we're telling you that we know best. You're too stupid to know what's best for your children. We are not going to allow you to do this because we, the elite, liberal, white, intellectual, are going to, we know what's best, and so we're going to tell you what to do, whether you want to or not. So basically, there's really no difference between these two. They both are just as bad. And so that's what we have for the last 50 years or so. And so what most minorities want actually is school choice. And I put research to support that. There was research by Dr. Marianne Raywitt of Hofstra University. That's in New York. And it showed that, quote, both attendance and student behavior improve in schools of choice, and for all types of students, from the neediest to the most outstanding, alternatives seem to produce significant growth and achievement, both cognitive, social, and affective. All of that, end quote. So when you have schools of choice, now remember, you're not preventing blacks. This isn't like the old freedom of choice, which was sort of used as a racist evasion, where whites in the South would generally say, well, yeah, you got freedom of choice. Unfortunately, these white kids have freedom of choice, too, and their schools are already filled up, so too bad you don't get to go there. Now, we're not talking about that. We're talking about real choice that blacks would have to whether to go to a particular school or not. And so what you have here is a situation where when you have that opportunity, that choice, parents aren't stupid. They generally, if you give them all the information, you know, here's what the school is like, here's what the teachers are like, here's the funding of that school, they can make a reasonably intelligent choice as to what's best for their youngster. And so what I do now at this point in the article is I say the following is a chronology of my attempt to right this wrong of liberal discrimination against minorities that court-ordered busing has caused for decades. And at this point in the article, what I do is go into my own personal experience. This isn't, you know, something I've sat around and just sort of theorized about, you know, I ponder these great imponderables and why is this happening. But for many, many years, I literally saw this, what was happening, and tried to write it. For example, in the South, if any of your listeners are familiar with what happened in the South years ago, in buses, for example, blacks were told they must sit at the back of the bus. You may have heard of that expression, the back of the bus. And at the time, it seemed to me sort of odd. But then when liberals came along, it was fairly clear to me that it wasn't the back of the bus that was the problem. What it was is the problem for most of the minorities was that it was the white power structure was telling them where to sit, period. And so it really didn't matter whether it was a white...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Well, Dr. Cuddy was simply pointing out that in the Old South, why the blacks ordinarily had to sit in the back of the bus, and it was the white power structure that said to the blacks, you have to sit in the back of the bus, the whites will sit in the front of the bus. But it was the white power structure that did that. Well, of course, they changed, and you had another white power structure, and now they were the liberals, and they said, well, no, you can't sit in the back of the bus. You can sit anywhere you want to. You know, we're here because we love you, and we want to make your life better, and go right ahead with the story, Dennis.
Okay, well, the problem was they didn't actually do that. It would have been better if they had done it, but what they actually did, the white liberals, was they say, okay, those evil white Southern racist conservatives, we're forcing you to sit at the back of the bus. We, however, we are wonderful. We know what's best for you, you know, and what we're going to do is we're going to parcel you out throughout the bus. Now, you five black people who've just gotten on the bus, there are five seats right here at the front of the bus. That's five seats. They're open seats right here at the front of the bus. Now, you may want to sit right there at the front of the bus, but we, the liberals, we're not going to let you do that. We're going to parcel you out. We're going to take one of you over here in seat number 7, and then we're going to put the other one down in seat number 14 on the left side. And the third one of you, we're going to sit there at the sort of the back right in seat 21. And then coming up here on seat 28, we're going to put another. In other words, we're not going to let you sit where you want to either. We're going to parcel you out. You know, we're going to distribute you against your will. Yeah, there's five seats at the front. Front of the bus is great, you know, less room to walk. But we're going to prevent you from doing that. So, in other words, what you have is one group of white racist segregationists who are forcing blacks to sit at the back of the bus. But they're replaced by a similar group of these white, generally white liberal intellectuals. Often, unfortunately, black liberals as well did the same thing. They were perfectly willing to go along with this new elitist group of also telling blacks where they could and could not, couldn't sit on a bus.
Well, no, they really didn't tell them where they couldn't sit on the bus, which you're really using as an analogy when they're forcibly integrating the schools.
Right. But, yeah, they didn't really do that. The analogy is, though, that by racially distributing them amongst the schools in a certain percentage, the analogy to the bus was, even if there was the best spot on the bus, in other words, the best school, they weren't going to let the blacks attend that. They were going to parcel them out, and I'll explain how that happens in a minute here. Now, what I did years ago, I was teaching at UNC Chapel Hill in the early 80s, 1981 and 82. And at the time, I had just been previously, in a few years before that, teaching in the public schools where I am. I taught in predominantly white neighborhoods, and then busing started, and I taught in a predominantly black neighborhood. And so I was witnessing what was going on. And so I wrote this article for the Washington Post. It appeared March 24 of 1981. And I related that court-ordered busing was actually discriminating against minorities. And so soon thereafter, of course, it was the beginning of the Reagan administration, and I got a call and was asked to work in that administration with the title of Senior Associate at the U.S. Department of Education. It was actually a division called the National Institute of Education, and it was within what was called the Office of Educational Research and Improvement. Now, I did a number of other things, but that was basically it. And we had various assignments. It wasn't just the desegregation team. But anyway, I was assigned to a desegregation team and developed what I called a predominant first choice that's unlike the freedom of choice, where, you know, whites could say, gee, I'm sorry, the white kids have freedom of choice, too, and they're all already filled up their neighborhood schools, so you black youngsters can't come there. This was predominant first choice and free transportation. The free transportation was critical. Most kids get free transportation in school buses anyway. But if you're poor, then that's absolutely essential. And that was the basic solution I gave to the problem of forced busing. So what I did was I sent it over to a congressman, and the congressman sent that over to the Congressional Research Service, and they analyzed it, and they did a response that, quote, the remedy feature of this bill that I had proposed sets it apart from present bills not only because this particular remedy is offered, but also because any remedy is offered. In other words, nobody was doing anything about this for decades. Now, this is 1981, Brown versus Board of Education is back in 1954. And all of these blacks had been suffering under this, what was just accepted by the power structure, the liberal elite, generally white power structure, although elite blacks felt similarly. That's why you'll see it is more often the case that elite whites and elite blacks are seen together than either one of them with the poorer parts of their own racial community. I think I hear the music. Okay, I'll continue. I immediately sent this article to a respected Washington Post columnist, happens to be black, William Raspberry. And he analyzed it in his column of November 5, 1982. And I followed this up with a letter to the Washington Post published on November 10th explaining magnet schools and so forth. And I think I hear the music getting stronger.
It's getting stronger and stronger. Well, our guest is Dr. Dennis Keddie. And, of course, the thing is that the school busing has not improved the lot of the blacks at all. What it did is, of course, is really discriminated against them.
Yep.
Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. And, Chris, instead of having a colorblind society, which was what the civil rights movement purported to want, what we were going to do is target the blacks. Oh, we're going to get you a good education. We're going to send you to the white schools. You're going to have to ride on the bus a couple of hours a day. But of course, was this really going to give them a better education at all? You picked this story up there, Dennis.
Right, and of course it wasn't. And anybody with any sense, which they do have, these liberal white intellectuals, knows that it isn't. They know that if you deny an hour or two study time, that that's going to affect these youngsters' grades. But they're really not concerned about that, because a court order, racial balanced busing, was really more of a social experiment. What they would say is, well, if we just get these kids, you know, mixing together, we'll all have peace and harmony and so forth. And they really didn't care about the academic achievement of minorities, or at least it was secondary. And we did, you know, we did tons of research. There was, at NIE, we funded various studies on all of these aspects to find out, you know, exactly where the facts were. And so at this time, I had sent this idea, this solution, to William Raspberry, the Washington Post. He analyzed it, and I did a follow-up letter explaining about magnet schools and so forth and how it would work. And so both of these, this material, I sent over to the Solicitor General at the time, Rex Lee. He's the one, the Solicitor General is the one who argues cases before the court, primarily the Supreme Court of the United States, because we had an idea that eventually this would wind up at the Supreme Court. And Rex Lee in the Reagan administration replied on November 24 of that year, 1982, shortly after I'd gotten to Washington, quote, "I had read and heard about you and had grown to respect your views," end quote. And so since it seemed to have a good hearing there, the next step was to write a legal article, which I did, for the federal government journals. It was called American Education. It's a federal government journal. It came out every month, and this particular issue was May 1983. And I did the whole history, you know, Brown versus Board of Education, the Green decision, in various cases, the Swan decision in Charlotte, and traced this right on up to that date, the early 80s, from when this all began, and showed how this has really been messing up education, primarily for blacks, and really was discriminating against the people, the very people who was trying to help. And so what happened next was I was then, when they read this, I was then invited by the Justice Department under the Reagan administration to attend several meetings on the issue. It primarily involved Assistant Attorney General William Bradford Reynolds, and he had a deputy, Charles Cooper, and a John Roberts.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Dr. Cuddy is telling us about his experience in the Reagan administration, the Department of Education, as he was, of course, evaluating the defects and the terrible problems that were created by school busing at that time. And, of course, he had written some treatises on this and felt that the school busing was not accomplishing what it was intended to. The blacks were spending, several hours a day in school buses. Their educational level was not improving. They were not having the time for their schoolwork. And so Dennis, of course, written these articles, and eventually he is asked to come over to the Justice Department, and of course, meeting with some of the people in the Justice Department, the Attorney General, and then a young man in the Justice Department at that time, a man who today is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. His name was Roberts. Go ahead.
Slight clarification. They broke down by division. So it was the Assistant Attorney General, William Bradford Reynolds,
all right,
who was over that particular civil rights division, his deputy, Charles Cooper. And I'm not real clear, but they had other people that it may have been. I wouldn't be surprised, because there was this, it wasn't just these two, it was like a meeting. That John Roberts was there as well, now the U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice. And so what happened was the Justice Department, after we talked this through, asked me to go testify over at Congress. And at the time, there was this liberal representative, Don Edwards from California, and he was head of this subcommittee on civil and constitutional rights. And they were looking at two things, civil rights and then busing, and then affirmative action as well. And so I went over there before Congress, And it was June 29th of 1983. And I remember sitting there in front of them. They're all sitting, up on this higher level, and they're glaring down at you with their aides and so forth, and, peppering you with questions, and you're having to defend what you're saying. And so I did that, and, I gave them as good as I got on this thing and explained to them how you people, I think I use that word, you people are actually discriminating against blacks, even though you claim to be helping them. And so anyway, that was over, and I got a transcript of the testimony, and I sent it back over to Solicitor General Lee on July 18th of that year, 1983. And again, I got a nice reply. He said, quote, "I read the transcript of your testimony of June 29th with interest and concluded once again that some of the soundest and most progressive thinking that is being done on this important subject is coming from you," end quote. And so, that was nice. But the point is, I was getting this thing cleared in the judicial system with the person who would have to argue this type of case if it came before the Supreme Court. So, I'm touching bases trying to see, if this thing's going to fly. And so at this time, I was also part of a team at the National Institute of Education overseeing what we called, quote, "a definitive research effort regarding integration and black achievement," end quote. And when I say that, you have to remember this isn't just a Reagan team. There's a majority of the people were still Jimmy Carter liberal holdovers in the bureaucracy, which they made, they convert them from political appointees to bureaucrats. And so most of the team were these people, and we finally pressed, and we got them to do this definitive research study. So what we said was, look, let's have two pros, two antis, two neutral on all of this. They have to be statisticians. They have to be the top of the line from universities all over the country. I mean, this was agreed on. The liberals agreed, okay, let's do this thing. And so we did, and so, we had these conferences with them and study groups and so forth and went over. I mean, the statistics were amazing. They would take these huge, it's like 400-page statistical analyses of a particular study. They called them meta-analyses of previous studies over the past 30 years that had been done, and painstakingly these percentages were calculated and so on and so on. And so what happened was they came out with the results, and so I wrote this up. I described it in a column I sent to the Los Angeles Times. It was published May 16th, 1984. And you have to abbreviate, so as I indicated that, quote, "black achievement in reading may have improved slightly in the year in which integration occurred, just that year, but black achievement in mathematics appears not to improve at all as a result of integration." See, what they limited us to was saying, okay, here's the year before, and then here's the year integration occurred, and so what happened during that year. And so, I got all kinds of stink from all over the place for even writing about this. The liberals were incensed by this sort of thing. And so NIE at the time was also producing what they called an effective desegregated schools report, a copy of which was requested by Assistant Attorney General Reynolds at the Justice Department. And then he wrote on October 1, 1984, quote, this is a letter he wrote to me, quote, "keep up the excellent work. Your voice on this issue has been instrumental in awakening the American public to the failures of racial balance busing and the inherent strength in alternative desegregation relief that emphasizes A, open enrollment opportunities for those interested in moving to predominantly other race schools, B, student transfer incentives such as free transfer to the school of choice, and C, enhanced curriculum programs." He continues, "I think we have made great progress in this endeavor and can look forward to declaring total victory in the not-too-distant future," end quote. Okay, so what this means is the Reagan administration just wasn't inhabited by a bunch of, old fuddy-duddy reactionary white people. There was literally an attempt to right this wrong of discrimination that racial balance busing, court-ordered busing, had presented to blacks for decades, because this is affecting their academic achievement. This is affecting whether, like I said, if you have a listener who's a black person and 50 years old, you may well have done far better in school, in elementary and secondary school, if this hadn't occurred to you. You may have therefore done better in college. You may therefore have gotten a better job, or even if you didn't go to college, you may have done better and gotten a better job with a manufacturing firm or wherever, and you may have made a lot more money over the years, except for what these people primarily liberal white elitists, did to you. And so the Justice Department, at least at that time when Reagan came in, was trying to get some sort of positive solution to the problem that court-ordered busing was discriminating against minorities. Now, there's always, you know, one or two people who are trying to use this larger issue. I remember going to Congress and saying, well, let's try this. I tried to get a senator to introduce this in terms of federal legislation. And he said, well, you know, we want to use this issue to limit the court's jurisdiction. And I said, yeah, I understand Article 1, Section 8, and Article 3, Section 2. That's right, you can limit court's jurisdiction. It's done. I said, but after you try this for the umpteenth time and after you get defeated on it, why don't you actually try something that'll work, that'll be acceptable to minorities? And, you know, that was the end of that. So I said, well, let's try something else. And so what I did was I followed William Raspberry's, the columnist with the Post, advice. What he said when he wrote up, you know, my solution to this, he wrote up a whole column about it. His advice was to, quote, get a local school district to adopt it on an experimental basis, end quote. And I said, okay, let's go with that. And so now I'd already discussed the solution with the attorney for the city of Norfolk in Virginia. And they developed a school attendance plan that included, to a large extent, not exclusively, but to a large extent, the principles of the proposal that I had come up with about free choice, predominant first choice, and free transportation. And what happened was, lo and behold, it moves through the courts, district court, and eventually up to the U.S. Court of Appeals, the Federal U.S. Court of Appeals, and it was upheld. So what happened was, then back there in the 80s, you started this reversal. You could start seeing it over and over again. The court started saying, well, I guess we will grant unitary status. Well, I guess we will sort of back off a little on this court-ordered busing. Now, it's still massive. It's still all over the country. A lot of school systems, just fearful of court orders, will adopt it voluntarily. That doesn't matter. The point is, this racial balanced busing actually discriminates against minorities. And starting in the 80s, you at least had the Court of Appeals, U.S. Court of Appeals, that's right below the U.S. Supreme Court, at least saying, you know, this is okay. This solution is okay. Now, to give you an idea of who really wants this, it's not the liberal whites, of course. It's not the liberal blacks. It's primarily lower and middle class blacks who really love this thing and who pursue it. The opposition to mandatory busing in Norfolk was led by a fellow named Nelson White. Who was he? He was a black 45-year-old house painter and his wife. They're the ones that led it. And when White, this fellow whose name is White, he's actually black, asked proponents, that's including black proponents of busing, he asked them, quote, why don't you go out and ask the people how they feel, end quote. And he says they would say, we know nobody likes busing, but it's necessary, end quote. Now, what was Mr. White's response to that? He responded this by saying that proponents, this is black and white proponents of forced busing, we're engaging in a type of, quote, intellectual fascism with them making the decisions for us instead of really seeking our input, end quote. And that's the bottom line. That's what these people have been doing for decades. It's like if the analogy I used about the bus is like, okay, fine, we're not going to make you sit at the back of the bus, but we're not going to let you sit at the front of the bus all together, all five of you, either. We're going to parcel you out, separate you from each other, whether you like it or not. Basically, what they're doing is saying, we're going to take this black youngster. I remember what happened was I was in a particular school. Well, I'll get to it in a minute. Let me continue with this Norfolk. So what happened was after this went through, after Norfolk adopted it, I waited a year. And then I obtained a copy of the Norfolk School District student test scores the year after the plan was implemented. And what happened was the test scores rose. They actually increased. You know, why not? You're not putting these black youngsters on a bus for an hour or so a day that you're not doing to the white youngsters. So this showed that there were no adverse effects, no adverse academic effects occurred when blacks exercised their own self-determination concerning what schools best met the needs of their children. And so the principals then, after that, of my solution were next tried in Oklahoma City, got copies of their test scores, and that was successfully implemented there. You know, scores rose in Oklahoma City. And in several other places, one after another, around the U.S. And so my concluding paragraph in this is even black leftists, I mean, you know, even a black leftist like W.E.B. Du Bois over 100 years ago said that the black child, quote, needs neither segregated schools nor mixed schools. What he needs is an education. That's the problem. Education, academic achievement should have been put at the foremost. But generally, liberal white intellectuals, they're not interested in that. They want to have this social experiment where they become the new dictator to blacks rather than the racist white segregationist of the South. And so what I say in my article is that blacks are no longer the slaves of whites and should not continue to be treated as such. White liberal elitists should no longer dictate to blacks what schools their children must attend. When I taught in the public school in a black neighborhood, what happened was they sent very good teachers to this school because they wanted to make it a model. All right, so we all go to this school in a black neighborhood. And it was, I mean, everybody admitted it was the best middle school in the city. It became the best middle school in the city. So what do you think happened? You think the liberals would say, hot diggity, we got the best school here, this will really help the black youngsters? No. Liberal government officials discriminated by busing about 70% of them. The city I'm located in is 70% white, 30% black. What they did was, okay, now you've got the best school right there in the black neighborhood. So I tell you what we're going to do. This is the liberal government officials. We're going to take 70% of you youngsters, the neighborhood blacks, and we're going to ship you across town to inferior schools in white neighborhoods far away just for the sake of racial balance. Now, you're not going to be able to study on this school bus, and your parents aren't going to be able to get over there, but aren't we wonderful for doing this to you? And so my conclusion of this is perhaps one day, though, blacks across the U.S. will be, and you'll remember this phrase, quote, free at last, quote, to determine for themselves what schools their children will attend. It hadn't happened yet. It's starting to, but it hasn't happened yet, and it has had tremendous negative impact, not only on blacks, especially blacks, but on the whole society. When you deny any group of people academic achievement, when you deny them a good education by doing something deliberately to them, which discriminates against them, that has to impact the whole society, whites as well as black. And that's what these people have done for 50 years. And I can almost guarantee you that your listeners have never heard anything like I just told them from the media, from ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times. They don't want you to know this. They don't want you to think about it. They don't want you to consider it. It is a deliberately kept secret that this massive discrimination impacting primarily blacks, but also whites, because it affects the whole population, you know, education, buying power, good jobs, and so forth. They don't want you to know this stuff. That's why I may be one of the most censored people in the country, although there were a few exceptions. Like I said, William Raspberry with the Washington Post, a very honest, decent fellow, he's now retired, at least gave this a chance. And the people in the Reagan administration, despite all of their criticism of them as the, you know, these bunch of upstart conservatives coming in, really did try, most of them, not all, there's always a few bad apples, but most of them wanted a positive solution to end this discrimination against blacks in America, which has affected, you know, like I said, if the population is 12%, which it is of the country, that means 88% of those bussed are blacks. Only 12% are bussed outside their neighborhood for racial balance. This has had far more impact on blacks than it has on whites. And that, in terms of the black population, what it means is the vast majority, 88% have been affected by this massive discrimination against them, which went unchallenged, basically, until the 80s. And now, at least, there is access to a solution that can be tried. And if your listeners know of a school system, and there still are many, many, many that are under these court orders, or the school system, as I said, fearing a court order, voluntarily instituted racial balance busing, at least you now have the ammunition to go to those school boards and say, look, you know, this has got to stop. You people have been dumping on us blacks for decades now. You're discriminating against us. Don't go pointing to those white Southerners. You're just as bad. And this has got to stop. You're impacting my child's education. I can't get to those schools. You're hurting his academic achievement, which means you're hurting his job prospects. You got to stop this stuff.
Well, I really feel very, very sorry for the blacks in America, because I really believe that there is an organized effort to dumb them down.
Right.
And, of course, we know, for instance, with the AIDS virus, which I'm firmly convinced is genetically engineered, and I could prove that in any court of law, and that's why over half of the new AIDS cases in the United States are in blacks, because this organism is genetically engineered to attack blacks. That's why you go to Africa, and you'll find that in Botswana, 46% of the pregnant women are HIV infected. You don't find that in America. Is it because they're so terribly promiscuous over there? Of course not. It's that this disease, a genetically created disease, has the propensity for blacks. And we can see this, certainly with Margaret Sanger and her, her abortion programs. Most of the abortion clinics were put down where the blacks lived. And now, of course, and I know you've talked along with me to Dr. Roger Masters, who's a professor back at Dartmouth. And he's pointed out that when you fluoridate the water with hydrofluorosilicic acid, you increase the level of lead in the blood of those children 6 times. Lead destroys their minds. Is that why 1 in every 3 young black men is in prison, probation, or parole in America today? Could there really be this intense hatred of blacks? Well, Dr. Cuddy, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Okay, well, in terms of busing, that's the conclusion, but I want to expand at the end just to what you were saying. What you often find is that these liberal elitists often have this sort of eugenic mentality. And eugenics doesn't just mean, I'm going to do this to this person, sterilize them or whatever, but it's I know what's best for you. I will program your life for you. I will tell you what to do and not do, because I'm so much better than you. I'm so much, well-bred, and so on. And there is this this race, it's not so subtle, a racist element to it. Even people back like Ben Franklin would say it'd be better if the Anglo-Saxon race, inhabited all the world. And you find this coming up, as Dr. Stan said, in the eugenics movement, and Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger, little in terms of what she called the dysgenic stocks, that would include, Catholics, Gypsies, and blacks, she would actually have what she called a Negro project. And she would go out and she'd find some black minister and say, I think the quote is, we're selecting this black minister to go out to the community, the black community, and allay their fears. We don't want them to get the idea that we're trying to, undercut their population with this. But basically, that's what they're doing. And I may have mentioned in a previous program how Faye Waddleton, she was black, and she was, not now, but she was head of Planned Parenthood. And I have a videotape of her, and she's saying, we've received contributions from people who want to give to us Planned Parenthood because they want to see that all black women stop having children. And that is literally their attitude. These people are, look at them, they're inferior and so forth, so we got to, keep them down there. Now, this is usually a guise of, we're helping you. Don't you understand how you're poor? And isn't poverty bad? And, we're going to do that. Same thing with busing. We know what's best for you. You're too dumb to know what's the best for your child in terms of education, and we're going to tell you what to do. And so there is this sort of elitist racism in there. They wouldn't think that. They wouldn't say, I'm a racist. Oh, no, they're not. But really, that's what they are. They consider themselves superior, and therefore they need to take care of you and do what's best for you. And I'm afraid it is larger than this issue of busing. And as Dr. Stan says, what's happened is, in fact, there are articles that have said the black community is destroyed, drugs come in and so forth, the family is broken up through things like abortion. A disproportionate number of abortions happened among blacks. So, and what has really abortion done? The Supreme Court and Roe v. Wade. What it's done is tell the black man, you're so unimportant, that even if you want to save the life of your child, you can't.
We're out of time, Dennis. God bless, and thanks so much.
God bless you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dennis. I had no idea he played such an important part in this whole busing debate. But believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there are those people who have an intense hatred of the black, and there really is a program to do away with the blacks through genetic engineering. If you doubt that there are those people with our society, key people at the highest echelons of government who want to create new diseases so that they can just destroy certain groups genetically, All you have to do is go to the website, the newamericansensory.org. That's newamericansensory.org. www.newamericansensory.org. It's a website that was put up by Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and John Bolton and Paul Wolfowitz and Gary Bauer. Oh, yes, that a great American Christian hero. William Bennett, certainly. Norman Potter Oates, Elliot Abrahams, Jeb Bush. You go to the website, and, of course, you pull down, first of all, the 1997 Statement of Principles. You'll find all the names listed there that I mentioned. That's 1997. And then, of course, get their Rebuilding America's Defenses treatise. And there you'll find out they talk about how wonderful it's going to be when we be able to create new diseases that will allow us to target specific races. That's what it's all about. It's very difficult for people to believe anything could be that diabolical, but this is really true. And one reason, of course, that they're fluoridating the drinking water is because if you fluoridate the drinking water with hydrofluosilicic acid, and, of course, you have to, over 90% of the areas that are fluoridated are not putting in sodium fluoride in the water, they're putting in hydrofluosilicic acid. And if you'd like the material out of Dartmouth by Professor Roger Masters, and we actually have that, and we'd be glad to get you a copy of my interview with him. Roger Masters had done these studies all across the country in the areas where they had the water fluoridated and non-fluoridated with hydrofluosilicic acid. And the lead level, there's no safe level of lead because it destroys the mind. And yet, of course, it went up 6 times in the blacks. Isn't that wonderful? If you wanted to destroy the black population, there were over 400,000 children tested, and they found that the blacks, the level of blood the level of lead in their blood went up 6 times. Understand what we're up against. We're up against people who are inherently evil, and when you understand that, you can understand why they're giving millions of dollars, say, in San Diego today, because they want to fluoridate the water supply in the southern part of our state, or they're giving $1 million in Watsonville to fluoridate the water because they want to destroy the minds of the people, both black and white, but specifically the blacks, because there's the intense hatred of the blacks, and this gets around to this, spiritual forces that work behind the scenes, and they go all the way back to Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who founded Theosophy in the 1870s. She hated blacks, as do all of the people in their group. And, of course, that's covered in the material that Constance Cumby put out on the Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. The book's out of print now, but we do have a four-tape set of my interviews with Constance Cumby. We have a DVD It's called The Emergence. That's a DVD called The Emergence. And then, of course, to put things into their proper perspective, you really need to get my talk on The Forbidden Secret. And then the secret behind the secret. Now, that doesn't necessarily certainly have anything to do with the conspiracy against the blacks. But if any of you out there in the listening audience would like, you can go up to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph and look on page 3 where you'll find Margaret Sanger, the woman who founded Planned Parenthood, who talked about, and I quote, "The most successful educational approach to the Negro is through religious appeal. We don't want word to get around that we want to exterminate the Negro population, and the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea. If it ever occurs to any of the more rebellious members," that's what they're talking about. If the blacks begin to understand what's going on, we'll get to the ministers to reassure them. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. Don't believe a word we say? Check it out. Could it really be true?